Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our redeemer. Amen. Amen. So we're doing this study through the seven deadly sins or sins, and we come to greed. So what has been your favorite sin so far? What's been your favorite sin? Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21, it really contains the parable of the rich fool. I'm going to set the context for you. And it's prompted by a man who was demanding the share of his family inheritance. And Jesus, in this parable, he warns against the danger of greed. And that's the sin that we're looking at today. He illustrates that true life is really not measured by our possessions. That's what Jesus wants to promote in this particular parable. But true life is measured by our spiritual richness, our relationship with others, and our eternal standing with God. And so the context is, it's really an enticing incident that happens in this text. The passage opens with an unidentified man. And it's usually women in the New Testament who are unidentified, but in this particular case, it's an unidentified man who interrupts Jesus while Jesus is teaching and asks him to kind of be his arbitrator between him and his brother. In Jewish traditions, rabbis were sometimes asked to act as the legal in-between person. However, Jesus refuses this request and uses the interruption then to warn the crowd. Jesus always takes advantage of teachable moments. No matter what situations people bring to him, he uses it as an opportunity to teach. And he used the interruption to warn the crowd, watch out, be on guard against all kinds of greed. Life doesn't consist of the abundance of our possession, is what he says in Luke chapter 12, verse 15. And Jesus elevates this physical dispute between this family to a matter of the heart. And he then begins to warn about this obsession with obtaining wealth. To illustrate his warning, Jesus tells the story of a wealthy farmer whose land yields a massive surplus. And the man faces a dilemma. He has no space to store all of this extra stuff that he has. And his solution is what? Build more storage. Have you ever paid attention? And maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm not unique. How many storage? Yes. Have you ever paid attention? I was driving around the other day. I'm saying, how in the world can we have this many storage facilities but can't find housing for the unhoused? For our excess. Some of the stuff that we haven't touched, used, or seen in years. We have it stored up. But his answer to the problem, or the blessing rather, I have all this excess wheat, all this excess grain, I'm going to build more storage. He plans to tear down his smaller barns and build larger ones and store all of this surplus. He's going to hoard it. And the vocabulary highlights his isolation in verses 17 through 19. The farmer uses this personal pronoun, I. My, six times in this text. And he assumes his wealth would provide the ultimate security and the plan for his retirement and his indulgence. Verses 12 to 19. He fails to acknowledge that God as the source of the blessings that he has in his life and the responsibility that he has to community. To community. That's kind of the background. So if you had to summarize that and have what I would call a theological conclusion, the Jesus concludes that the passage with a stark statement. This is how it will be with whoever stores up treasures for themselves. but is not rich towards God. And that's the last verse that is used in the text, okay? The text explains the parable of the rich fool in Luke chapter 12 through 31 and contrasting like the worldly wisdom that we have and kind of spiritual readiness. What do we do with all of the blessings that God has poured into our life is one of the questions that the text has. And so it is this self-centeredness approach. There is the lack of gratitude. There is this false security that this guy has. And then there's this failure to share. Failure to share. So the first three points on our outline is Gilligan Island's metaphor. And before the service began, we were talking, a couple of us, about, for those of you who are young enough to remember Gilligan's Island, we're using the characters in Gilligan's Island to identify or associate with a particular sin. And we said that jealousy that we talked about would probably be connected with Marianne, right? Marianne, because she was always jealous of Ginger. And so if you had to think of a character in Gilligan's Island who you would associate greed with, if you remember Gilligan's Island, who would it be? The Powells, Thurston Howell the Third. Mr. Magoo. And then there's the Gordon Gekko, one of the monologues that I have used to audition for stuff, play. The point, ladies and gentlemen, is that greed, for the lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed defiles, it cuts through, and it captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed in all of its forms. Greed for life, greed for money, greed for love, greed for knowledge, has marked the upward surge of humankind. And greed, you mark my word, will put only the weak behind. Greed is good. I love that monologue. It's just so powerful. It's so powerful. And so let's work with a working definition of greed. How would you define greed? And again, it's just we're working on a definition together. Thoughts. And so We set up the seating like this to make it more conversational, and then we put the mic in the middle so that if you want to speak, either grab the mic and pass it around, because we don't have anyone to pass it around today, so that our family on Zoom can hear you. So if you want to comment, grab the mic and just pass it around as you see people wanting to comment. So Ruben, you're number one, and then you just look around and see who has the mic, who wants it, and then you could pass it to them. Okay, Ruben?
Greed, I believe, is having a little or like too much of something and just kind of like boxing it in and not wanting to share. I think it's like the main thing, or it can be like also for emotion. You could be greedy in your own emotions, or you can just like lock yourself in, and even though you have a lot to give,
okay,
you kind of box yourself in. I guess that can change to a different definition, so that might not work. Maybe personal possessions, money, or anything like that. Wanting to share.
Okay. And just remember, hold the mic close so that, okay, Sean? Greed.
You really want something, but more than that, there has to be scarcity of resources. If you really want something, there's plenty of it, right? You don't have to share it. There's enough of it. There's a scarcity of resources, and you're taking more than your share.
Okay. Anyone else want to add to that?
I would put it as the kids put it, selfish.
Selfish.
Or as Mackay says, shellfish.
Shellfish.
He has trouble with the SHs. But
shellfish.
Yeah, to me, when I see that, I just think, just selfish for many, many, many reasons, but overall, to simplify.
Linda.
Yeah, I think it's wanting more than you need.
Wanting more than you need. Yes, in the back. We need you to use the mic so that everyone can hear. Everyone needs to hear on Zoom. Yeah, they can't hear you if you're talking without the mic.
Yes, actually, the greed is someone that wants more and more, and they usually don't want to give it to the people. And it really brings me, maybe do not like it, but I'm a very honest person. United States of America President Trump is a very greedy person. He has lots of, and he wants Greenland, he wants this one, Iran, that one, and also Netanyahu is another one, the greedy people. Even my own government, those people that are just running right now after those crazy people that they were at the top, there are lots of crazy people that are greedy, they don't care about the people, only they think about their own pocket, that's why. And they don't think that how many people are under depression or whatever you are gonna, you know what I'm talking about. And that's the greedy, it's completely greedy people. I go to the example, I don't go with definition. It's example, what is the reality of life, you know? That has happened that we are suffering because of the, and also the greedy is the lawyer of my tenant, and also.
Okay, we're gonna stop at the definition right now. You going into a prayer request. All right, we'll get back to you. You'll get another chance to use the mic. Okay.
The imagery that comes to my mind is a person who's never satisfied. They can never be satisfied. Always wanting more.
Okay. Always wanting more.
There's a great quote. Who knows how accurate it is, but John D. Rockefeller supposedly was asked, how much is enough money? And he said, just a little bit more.
Mm.
And it's that insatiability for whatever it is that you want and aren't sharing, and along with the scarcity of it for other people to get it, as Sean was saying.
Okay, Lam in our chat, thank you for our family on Zoom for being with us, and thank you for actively participating. Lam says, we need to have more than we need to provide for others who lack right. And then Don and Cindy in the chat says, in the case you're acquiring for others and not yourself. Okay? Jim, I think those are the two. Terry says, looking for something in your future than being satisfied with what you have and being present in the moment.
I think of greed as in the scripture where it says idolatry is greed. And so I would say that the love of money and power over the love of God.
Okay, and then there's this chat going on, and Lamb says, and who determines how much more than what we need is enough? What about saving, traveling, could also be seen as not a need and as greed? I'm adding the "and as greed" part. So we have some working definitions of greed. The phrase that really jumps out at me when I think about greed is this phrase that I heard a television preacher say many years ago, and it is the desire to acquire gone haywire. The desire to acquire gone haywire. And it refers to an obsessive, insatiable hunger for material possessions, for status, that over our lives and leaving us constantly craving more. And if we could wrap all of that into all of what we just said. The mindset often leads sometimes to financial strain, clutter, hoarding, misplacing our sense of identity, this desire to acquire that goes haywire. It's not, according to this definition, a healthy desire for just self-improvement. It's not a healthy desire for just comfort that turned, but it's something that has turned into this uncontrollable need to accumulate and requires some introspection for us to even recognize that that is the situation that we find ourselves in. And it also causes, I think, sometimes confusion. The more monster is another way someone has defined greed, the more monster, the feeling that enough is not in our vocabulary, leading to this kind of never-ending cycle of striving for more. Any thoughts? Input? Jero.
What you just described is also called the hedonic treadmill, where your desires adjust with your means. So, you know, maybe when you're in your teens, you might just want a car, and that seems like, you know, that'll make you happy, but then, you know, you get the car and you start making more money, and then you want the better car, and so you're left in a state where you're never truly happy, regardless of how much you're making and how much you acquire.
Anyone else? I'm going to read what Don wrote in the chat, and I think he is responding to, and who determines how much more than what we need is enough? What about savings? Traveling could also be seen as not a need. And then Don wrote, but that could still be greed depending on why you're acquiring for others, especially if that is at the exclusion for others. And then there seems to be an inequity that is at the root of greed. Any comments to the comments that were stated in the chat? There seems to be an inequity at the root of greed. How do you overcome the haywire state, which usually involves some kind of decluttering or practicing of gratitude for what we already have and redefining what we really understand success to be? So, Jero, how do you overcome that?
Well, I don't know. But I think jealousy goes hand in hand with greed, because you were talking about, I mean, there are always going to be people who have less than you and people who have more than you, and as long as there are people who have more than you, then there will be a feeling of, like, keeping up with the Joneses. And it makes it harder to maybe sacrifice what you have to give to the less fortunate if you're always striving to catch up to or overcome, you know, those who have more.
Yeah, to and behind you, Jero.
For me, the thing that helps fight against this is really being present with what I have and enjoying it and appreciating it, not thinking about anything else and having an identity that isn't dependent on material anything. Having my identity be being present, being with God, being with others, and just enjoying this moment instead of thinking about what other moments could be giving me instead.
Ruben, I think you wanted to comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think to break, I guess, if people or society thinks someone or something is greedy or greed, there's many different ways to break that. Obviously, if it's like a financial situation, it doesn't have to be with form of money. You can help by being servant, public service, and that can break your, like, wanting to be greedy or all that. You can give back in other ways, or it doesn't have to be like possessions or
stuff like that. I don't know if I'm trying to make it, if that makes sense. But I know people can be, or even myself, I try not to be greedy with anything. So I try to like hoard whatever I have, because sometimes we feel like we don't have enough of something. So we want to hold on to it because, like, oh, you know, that's all I have or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you try to do other things so you don't feel that feeling of greed, that you're being greedy. So, like, you help out. I'm putting myself in that personal mm-hmm. to try to explain it. Hopefully it makes sense.
I read a quote by Maya Angelou many, many years ago, and on my good days, I practice it. She said, whenever you buy something, give something away. And I actually, like I said, on my good days, I'll go out and I'll buy a pair of shoes and I'll go home and I immediately go in my closet and get a pair of shoes that maybe sometimes I haven't even worn in weeks or months. And I say, well, this is the one I'm going to give away. That's on my good days. In the text, there's this family feud. And this man wants Jesus to kind of be the mediator. And Jesus refuses. He refuses to be the earthly arbitrator. And the core warning that Jesus gives is take care, be on guard against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist of the abundance of possessions. Does that mean we're not supposed to have anything? Talk to me. What is Jesus saying in this very stern warning in the text? Can everyone speak closer to the mic so that our family on Zoom can hear? What is Jesus saying so that everyone, what is Jesus saying in this text, in this stern warning? Take care that you guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of possession. What do you hear Jesus saying in this text?
Thank you. And this is kind of funny coming from a marketer, but in terms of demand, there are so many things around us that are meant to generate artificial demand, because as a society, we only need so much. But that much isn't enough to keep a lot of business going. So the messages around us telling us we need this, we need that, where we really don't. You know, we don't need a new iPhone every year. There are a lot of things we don't need. And I think a lot of it is to just be aware of those, you know, where is this coming from? What's the root of why I, you know, have the desire for this? You know, is it artificial? Do I really need it? Because ultimately, also realizing that, you know, if you look at these people who are billionaires, they're made their money off people buying, you know, the, you know, 99.99% of other people essentially handing over their money. So to realize, do I need this? And just know where it's coming from. You know, is it a need, or is someone telling me something that's a lie that I don't know, that I don't need?
But isn't that the American dream? Isn't bigger better? And don't we always want to supersize it?
No. I mean, another untruth, that something that's generated as part of the American dream, and, you know, it's, and making it visual and just playing into people's insecurity that you need this, and this is going to make you whole, and that's going to make you whole. And, you know, Jesus is what makes you whole, not a car or a big house or things like that.
Mylene and then Jero.
I'm just thinking about how when we're young, I can remember when being newly married, I wanted the car. Two cars and a house, and, you know, all of the things that we wanted, the American dream. And we all collect and collect and collect, and all of a sudden, about halfway, when you get to middle age, you're thinking, how can I get rid of some stuff? And then you spend the rest of your life getting rid of it and downsizing and clearing the clutter and all this other stuff. So it's kind of, and then I think as we get older too, we realize, you know, all that stuff doesn't really matter. What matters is my relationships with everyone around me.
I was just going to ask, like, how many times have we been left feeling unfulfilled by the things that we really thought we wanted or needed?
And couldn't live without.
And how many things have we bought that we end up, you know, just leaving on a shelf and not even really using?
So I'm going to be going back and forth to the text because I'm trying to bring life to the text in the context of this discussion on greed. The man experienced unprecedented success, this farmer. The man's land produced bumper crop. Is there anything wrong with his success? Is there anything wrong with his hard work? Is there anything wrong with his effective resource management? So what's the final flaw? What's the final flaw in this man? Matthew 6:21, someone in chat, Don in chat said, Matthew 6:21, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. If acquisition of things is our focus on life, we're missing out on life itself. The man's language is entirely self-absorbed. In his monologue, the pronouns that he used, I, my, me, mine, he forgets about God, he forgets about others, and he ignores the community around him. There's a phrase that many of us in this community have used repeatedly, and that's we have been blessed to be a blessing. The foolish joy. Instead of distributing the excess, we could talk about America. Did I hear correctly that America pays farmers to destroy crop?
Absolutely.
When people are starving. Instead of distributing the excess to those in need, what does he decide to do? Tear down the small barn and build a 3-car garage. Build a bigger one. Insulate himself against others. So the conclusion that I draw from this, I'll share with you after you share your conclusion. What do you draw from this story?
Thank you. And first of all, there's a difference between wealth and greed, because I don't see anything wrong with being wealthy and having abundance. And in this case, with this farmer who did these things, I think you're right on in terms of it came from him. And I think that line between how much is enough, and that's something I believe you really have to pray about. And really listen to him. What should I, I have all this crop, what should I do? Not, I'm going to do this and do that, because in reality, that's kind of the same thing that Joseph did, is, he stockpiled crops and as a result, got that city through the famine. So, but it's something that he was guided by God to do this, and I don't see evidence of that.
Can I interject here? I think for the Joseph story, the twist for me is that he wasn't doing that for himself.
Exactly, yeah.
He wasn't hoarding all of it. He was doing it in preparation for something that was coming so that he can help the people down the line. And I think that's a totally different approach to storing it just for myself, or even for me, my four, and no more.
Great point.
So we're going to jump down to the questions. They're all before you. The Thurston Howell test. We said that Thurston Howell would be the character that we would identify, Thurston Howell III. If you were stranded on a desert island with 3 hours worth of supplies, what security blanket would you miss the most and why? If you were stranded, and this goes to our family on Zoom at least, huh?
We're only stranded for 3 hours?
Yeah.
No, we only have 3 hours of supplies.
Yeah.
But how
with a three-hour tour worth of supplies. You only have 3 hours worth of supplies. What security blanket would you miss the most and why?
I would miss my guitar. Because music, you know, it would help with all the boredom of being stuck on the island with nothing to do.
Okay. I'm going to say food and water.
Food and water.
I would miss the triplets. I would take them along, but my daughter wouldn't approve. Because I think my mind... Well, actually, you're extremely occupied with, you know, young children. But yeah, the food, the water. But I think you could probably find that. So I would miss them. I would miss that personal, oh my God, I would miss them.
Behind you, Ruby.
We recently all went through this with a toilet paper shortage during COVID, and we may be coming up on a gas shortage, and we may be coming up on food shortages and just access to basic necessities if this war thing, whatever it is, continues. So 3 hours could be a lot longer for all of us coming up for a lot of basics that we've come to expect and rely on.
I'd almost forgotten about that, but did you remember during COVID and the shortage of toilet paper what Costco had to do to avoid greed?
Limit the amount you can buy. Lots of stores had them for lots of things. Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't care give up about anybody else. And some people even started stockpiling and selling.
Yep.
The desire to acquire gone haywire.
So is it greed to stockpile?
Is it?
I don't think so.
It's like saving. Well, I mean, does it deprive...
Wait, Jiro, you gotta use the mic, Jiro.
Oh.
Use the mic, Jerry. Is it greedy to stockpile is the question on the floor right now.
And I'm just asking, you know, is it at the cost of others? Is it depriving others in the process of stockpiling?
Yeah. And then I think, can we have an expanded definition of what stockpiling? How many pair of shoes do you have in your closet?
Oh, don't ask. Sometimes I shoes.
Hi, I'm Kenneth, and I'm a shoe addict. Is that stockpiling as well?
Well, I think, again, that's to bring to, you know, bring to Jesus. It's like, this is where I am. What should I do? It's like, because for some people, it might, you know, two pairs might be fine. There's some people who might have, for some reason or other, they might need 10. But I think that's, you know, these questions are when it's time to pray about it and, you know, hear what he says. Because there might be reasons beyond what we know that you should have more than most people would, you know, would originally think.
Next question is, when was the last time you experienced a plentiful harvest?
Thanksgiving dinner.
And the second part is, how did you react? What was your response to that plentiful harvest? Bonus check from your boss, extra refund in the taxes, you know, you went to the grocery store and they gave you $20 over your change, and is that a blessing? Just testing the waters. Look what the Lord blessed me with. Well, the person is going to come up short on their cash register. That's not a plentiful harvest. How did you react when you had a plentiful harvest? And again, this might be just something to think about. What did I do? Did I hoard it? Did I look for opportunities to share it? Did I stockpile it and just let it go waste? Well, if, you know, I forgot that I had it and it just wasted.
And that's something, I mean, a lot of my life I've been surrounded by, you know, I've been blessed to be surrounded by abundance. And, you know, I'm possibly, in terms of stockpiling, I'm probably very guilty of it. And I've been doing it pretty much my whole professional career. But it, to me, it all made it worthwhile when, you know, she said she wanted to go back to school and we could easily afford it. And so at that point, you know, way before I was married, I just did it, and, you know, I just felt like I should be doing it. And but it enabled somewhere down the road something I didn't see to enable me to do something. So I think that that's a really individual question, and that, you know, God sees what we don't and what we might need down the road. So, you know, that's my individual experience.
Natalie on the chat says, I think if you stock up and you are willing to share with anyone you know who may need it, it's pretty cool.
I'd say there might be a thin line between hoarding and security. Christy and I are retired, we're doing fine, but we're on a fixed income. We don't know what costs are gonna be down the road. We don't know what health challenges there might be. So if we're holding on to something that makes us feel secure about the future, maybe that looks like hoarding. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think a key thing that when you read this passage that would be helpful is to look, when you read this monologue by this farmer, is to look at the pronouns that he used and how many times it refers to himself. So, desire to acquire. Our culture runs on the idea that greed is good and that the upward surge of humanity depends on consumerism. Do you agree with the colloquy definition of greed, the desire to acquire gone haywire, or do you think greed is a necessary engine for our society to progress? Is greed needed?
They're related. I'd say greed is too much, but self-interest, it can be a good thing. It's a little different than greed.
How do you distinguish those two?
Well, self-interest is getting what you want and hopefully enough that you need, but greed is over the top. But self-interest can push forward a lot of good things for that person and for their community.
Anyone else?
And I think that greed is it's an overextension of something that is good, because I think it's a good thing to want more and want to better yourself, but that's it's a way overextension of that, you know, that's gone out of control, and it is really the desire to do better and have a better life is what drives us individually and us as a society. But when it becomes out of reason and really without purpose and without conviction, that's when I'd see that it's, you know, it's becomes undesirable.
So this is not on the list of questions, but it just dropped in my head, because I was having this conversation before our time together. If you were preaching from this text today, what sermon would you preach? This text of this farmer who has this abundance and hoards it or stockpiles it. What would you preach about if you were preaching from this text? Philip?
Be aware.
Of what?
Of how you're thinking and what you're doing. Hmm. I mean, he's saying, my mind, those are the things that I would be aware of. Those are, I would make sure that they are aware of those things. Because once you're, the old thing. If you're pointing this way, if you look at, if you're pointing one way, you got all three of these other fingers pointing at you. And so I would just, Christ makes, he makes it so, so emphatic. Fool. I mean, when you call somebody a fool, fool, your life is required tonight. I mean, that's hard. He ain't playing around with that one. It's like, if you don't choose the right stuff, your life may be required.
We didn't get to that point, but in the Bible, a fool is not necessarily someone who is lacking intelligence. But in the Bible, a fool is someone who acts as if God doesn't exist. That's the context. In the Bible, a fool is someone who acts as if God doesn't exist. Lamb says, it's so hard to find the line for these. Wait, where did you go, Lamb? It's so hard to find the line for these sins. It's so subjective and personal. It's so hard to find the line for these sins. It's so subjective and personal. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. The importance of a frequent self-assessment and reality checks to ensure that you're not sinful in your consumption and saving. And I think those are really good points. Those are really good points. Because where the line may be for me, it may not be for you. And is there a standard line that we have to all live by? And then if I hold you to my standard, am I judging you according to my standards or God's standards or your standards? It's really challenging. Jero, you look, there's several people on this side look like they want to speak to that or speak to something.
If I was preaching about this, I'd be preaching about circulation. That hoarding all of that grain, hoarding all of that abundance, doesn't have it circulating, doesn't have fresh things coming in. Mm. You've got all your stale stuff in the back that you've jammed into the back of your storage unit, and it's not getting better. You're not getting new, fresh things. You're not circulating. And so this energy, whatever it is, money, resources, energy, whatever, isn't circulating when you keep it all to you. When you share it, there's room for new things to come back in, for God to provide, to be generous, for us to provide and be generous, and for those cycles to continue and everybody to be raised together.
Let me read one of the other comments and then hear from you. Do you own your belongings or do your belongings own you? Terry asked in the chat. Someone else over to Gerald?
I was just going to say that just because someone may be greedy, it doesn't guarantee them good fortune and success. Mm. But what it almost definitely guarantees is that should they fall on bad fortune, it's going to be far less likely that people will want to help them out. Whereas, like, you know, if you think more communally, and if you think, you know, if you're more apt and prone to help others, then should you have some misfortune, then you know, they're likely to have your back.
Here's the last question. I think what you just said determines sometimes how we look at people. You know, am I willing to help this person who had this large possession and lost it because they were, I don't want to misquote you, they were more generous with what they had, or but now they don't have, so I'm more likely to help them? Maybe. And maybe it would be the case that if they hoarded everything and didn't think about anyone else, we would be less likely to help them. How does this parable speak to systemic wealth inequality and the disparity in our world today between the billionaires and the unhoused people living on the street. How does this parable speak to that? Because if we keep the Bible in, you know, this kind of cloudy space, it serves no purpose. It needs to come down here and speak to us. How does it speak to us?
I think it speaks directly to evil. I think that when the disparity is as great as it is right now, the wealthy say, oh, I've done so much. I've built a railroad, or I've done this. But they're making money off of it. And when you decimate a community because of such inequality and disparity, you're not looking out. I mean, I think our purpose is to be in community with one another, and I know a lot of people don't believe that, but I look at it as evil. Mm. Goes against everything. It's not like they're hoarding for a vacation. It's like they are scamming us. They are using our money that we, and I'm going to use our, that we pay in. And so I think that's beyond greed. I don't know. I can't even fathom that. I'm more like, what's the wife of, is it Bezos? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now she's an example of, I'm giving it all away. Mm-hmm. And that's what she does. And I don't know. It's unspeakable to me. Amen.
Nope. I couldn't agree more. And I think that what's really sobering is that, you know, Elon Musk right now is worth almost $1 trillion. And it's like, if you put that down to, you know, I think evil is the right word, because how many people, you know, for every, you know, billions of dollars he has, how many people die because of that? So just him accumulating that money, you know, people are dying, you know, people are going hungry. And that's the reality of it. You don't really think of him as like, oh yeah, he's, but it's just like that guy on like the Road Warrior, like that one guy who controls the water supply, and he just lets a certain amount each time, and people are just run over to just get a little bit of water when he has all this water he's controlling. And, you know, people like think that's evil, but essentially this is the same thing.
Yeah. Last comment, and then we're gonna wrap it up. Mylene?
I was just gonna say it's power. So to me, it's wicked because it's power. You're taking away the will and the power of others beneath you and acquiring even more and more power.
So here's food for thought. How would you and I change if tonight we inherited $100 million? Take that home. How would you change as a person? How would I change? Because it's easy to speak from this standpoint of the, and as much as we want to talk about have-nots, all of us in here are wealthy, given the standards that are used around the world. Every one of us. Probably not as wealthy as we want to be. I was drinking some water this week, and I drank half of the bottle of water, and my initial intention was, oh, I'll just throw the rest of it away. I'm saying, you know how many people would die for this much water? And sometimes, if I'm full, rather than just wasting, I pour it at least on a plant or something, but it's like, how many people, this much water, clean water? So how would we change? How would my attitude change? How would I change how I look at the unhoused and the people who are eating out of trash cans? How would I change? How would you change? Let's pray. God, we thank you for these times of reflection, and certainly not intended to be judgmental or pointing the finger at anyone, but saying, look into our hearts and see where we are and how we approach these different challenges in life. Amen.